It has taken 15 months, but the Federal Aviation Administration has overhauled pilot work rules to reflect current scientific understanding of how fatigue will impact our performance. Meanwhile, the FAA is also transitioning to the next-gen air transportation system, and we're learning more about how the FAA is working with Customs and Border Protection on certifying drone flights across along the southwest border. Randy Babbitt is the administrator at the FAA, and he joins us now this morning to bring us up to speed. Mr. Babbitt, it's a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's always my pleasure.
Now, I just mentioned three things that are going on with the FAA. Clearly, a full plate for the Federal Aviation Administration. Let's touch on, let's start with the pilot fatigue and the new rules. Those have just been released. And talk to us about the importance and the significance of this.
Well, I think the key thing that people should focus on is how important it is to have, you know, rested and well-trained crew members on board. And these rules, while in development for literally over 20 years, finally bring science and a lot of practical application together to make a very functional set of new rules that I think are going to allow both pilots and passengers to benefit.
And it sounds like everyone had to give a little bit. The pilots' unions had one view. The airline managers had another view. How did you navigate through those rocky shoals?
Well, I really have to applaud the way these rules are developed. We have an aviation rulemaking committee. We had a balanced team of people representing all the interests involved. And what was most important was that I think through collaboration and understanding, together they allowed science to, you know, split any log jams that they had. And that's the way it should work. They truly incorporate science and the recognition of what a work unit is, recognizing that all flight hours are not created the same. An hour flown at 3 o'clock in the morning is not the same difficulty or as fatiguing as an hour flown at 9 o'clock in the morning when you're well rested. So these all are incorporated in, and I applaud them for coming to consensus on almost all the issues.
And there are provisions for enforcement and for measuring the impact of this?
Yes, and they're also a very important component is the fact that we're going to educate pilots now. It's a part of their required training going forward. They'll have initial training, and then annually they'll have recurrent training to warn them of the signs of fatigue, as well as educating them on ways to mitigate fatigue and how those things come about. Recognition is very important. Fatigue is something that just sort of creeps up on you, and you don't really recognize, as all of us know, you don't recognize that you're fatigued until the mistakes begin, and that's what we want to avoid.
And it's safe to say, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this didn't start with that commuter flight crash over Buffalo last year, but it's something that's been a number of years in development.
Oh, absolutely. I think while the Buffalo accident was certainly a tragedy that we all regret, and I have to credit the family for bringing some, the families of the victims, for bringing some focus and attention. I personally testified on behalf of rules similar to this one that we just developed back in 1992. Pilot associations and the airlines actually debated this back in 1985. So this rule has been a long time in developing with some controversy along the way. But I'm very happy today that we have overcome the obstacles. We have a rule out for comment, and I'm looking forward to, you know, us integrating those comments into the final rule and having a final rule out by the end of next summer.
We're talking with FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt. And earlier this week, I wanted to mention that we talked with Customs and Border Protection, and they had said how they've been working with the FAA for certifying more drone flights, beefing up security along the border. And when you think of Border Patrol and border security, you don't always think of the FAA, but you played a critical role in that, too.
Yes, we do. The interesting part that I think people overlook is unmanned aerial systems or vehicles. They're in the same commercial space, or the potential for them to be in the same commercial airspace exists, and therefore they have to be regulated. And it's a very complex area. On the one hand, I think we all recognize a tremendous benefit, not only at the customs area over the borders, but a lot of other opportunities exist for these type of vehicles. I mean, we think about them. The Forest Service, for example, uses them to fly over our national forests and seek warm spots before they become forest fires and things of that sort. But our challenge is to make certain that they don't compromise any safety in the national airspace system, and that they have the same high standards of separation, avoidance, and control that we require in manned vehicles.
And that must be compounded in complexity by the fact that the pilot is somewhere else.
That's exactly right. The pilot is somewhere else. There's a certain degree of the further, once the machines get into the air, they often transition to a satellite link, and there is a latency or a time delay between the control input and the reaction. And that's a challenge for us. I mean, one of the things that we require of all aircraft in operating in the national airspace system is that machine or the pilot must have the ability to see and be seen, detect and be detected. So, and obviously going with that, the ability, the third component of that is to react to any intrusion. So if an aircraft comes too close, commercial aircraft, they have a series of warnings starting with air traffic control, but there is a series of steps that will avoid collisions. We need to make certain that unmanned vehicles have that same reaction and that same capability.
And we're all familiar with the next-gen system and how that's been progressing. Recently, a major milestone for that. Any new milestones on the horizon?
Well, we are making really, I'm very excited about NextGen. We're making good progress. We're meeting our targets, our milestones. We have, as we roll out different sites and become, more familiar, we operate them in parallel. The initial operating capabilities are tested in parallel with our conventional systems. But we have rolled out some very progressive new technology in a few areas, and we're completely operational now in Philadelphia, Louisville, in Newark. We have some interesting programs going on. The state of Alaska has been a pioneer with its Capstone program, which uses ADS-B all over the state, and Anchorage is also up and running. Most significant, we now have ADS-B coverage, and where this next-gen coverage and this airborne transmission, the automatic dependent surveillance broadcast, which is the ADS-B, it allows the aircraft to use satellites to define its position and then transmit that, and it can be read not only by the controller but by other aircraft, giving everyone the same situational awareness. It's very important out in the Gulf because we don't have radar out there, and yet we transport 10,000 people a day in the Gulf in helicopters on and off the almost 3,800 oil rigs that are out there. So that's a huge step for us, and I can tell you the controllers and pilots out there in the Gulf operating are pretty excited to have that new technology.
Well, sounds like a lot on your plate, and we'll let you get back to it. Randy Babbitt is the administrator of the FAA. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much, and appreciate you helping us get the word out on all the technology that we're rolling out. So thank you for your time this morning.